Om Shanti. Welcome to all of you here today and to all of you online. We're having souls from Season 7 that are enjoying, and that season is coming to a close. And of course, with one closes, the next one starts. Season 8 is arriving gradually, and so it's that yin and yang that's taking place. Today we have I have the pleasure of hosting Brother Ken, which a lot of you already know. Some of you might not. Brother Ken has been a fantastic child of Baba's for a very long time. He was one of the original jewels from the Western world to meet Baba, and him and Brother Charlie in Australia were kind of friends before they came into Gyan, I believe, and have had a long journey together. Brother Ken is one of the most successful Western BKs. His travels have taken him to Australia. He's laughing? Okay, well, he's one of the most successful BKs. His travels have taken him all over the world. But his real big thing is that he opened up South America, Central America, was a pillar in those regions, and is still there. Personally, I've known Ken for a long time. What I like about him is his deep scientific mind. He's able to go deep into points and churn them, and he's got all these diagrams and these pictures and things that he likes to do to explain things, which is fantastic. But along with that, he's also a lecturer. He gives conferences. He even charges for those conferences to non-BK people to help them learn life. And he's also a poet and a songwriter. And that last song just said it all. So the emperor, the gentle giant, Brother Ken is going to speak to us today on the law of love. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. What can I say? Some of what you said is true. I was just remembering when that song started to play, how I was feeling around that time. And of course, what brings us to Baba and what keeps us with Baba is his love. And it's not something you can put into diagrams. But I remember the first time I came to Madaban, I was the only foreigner here. And before me, maybe two or three had come. And because I hadn't done the course, I came to Baba, I went straight to the Mooli, no course, was a different situation, I suppose. I had been practicing the Raja Yoga of Patanjali before coming to Baba, so they're exactly the same principles that we have, if you're really serious about it. And I came to Baba in August of 75, so almost 50 years ago. And in November the same year, like 3 months later, I was in Madaban. And I remember I came here just before everyone started to come in. I was sitting there looking at this picture of Brahma Baba with Shiv Baba. And because I hadn't done the course, it was sort of in me, it was in my DNA, you could say. But the details, I really hadn't understood. Especially the role of Brahma Baba. And so I came and they said, a good place to sit is in Baba's room. It's not a practice that I had had in London where I came in Nikyan. We would just go to Mulian and, you know, it was just a nice feeling. Very few people. I think maybe the room where Daddy Janki read the Mulian was about a quarter of this stage. That's how big it was. Not many people could fit. But, so they said, go and sit in Baba's room. And in those days, Baba's room was maybe a third of the size that it is now in Pandavabhavan. Yesterday I was talking to Brother Anand, who's in charge of all of the cars and the buses and the trucks and maintenance and insurance and all of that. He looks after all of the many cars and buses and trucks and motorcycles that belong to the three campi, the different campuses. So, and I was telling him that the first time I came here, there was only one car, one old bus, and one old truck that was left over from the Second World War. That was it. And he said he'd taken over the transport department from Dada Nand Kishore. And I remember Dada Nand Kishore was the one that had one car. So probably that's how come he got into the transport department. And he would take us around here and there. But anyway, that first time I came, they said, go and sit in Baba's room. And so I did. And probably the same happens with you when you start to look deeply into Bap Dada's picture. It seems like it's alive, right? If you do something, if you've been doing something not so great, Baba has a stern eye. And if you've been doing something great, there's a sort of a smile. But I was just sitting there. I'd never done it before. To sit in front of a picture and look into the picture. In London, they didn't do that. At least I hadn't seen people doing like that. And I had such a feeling of being welcomed. As if, you know, the long search is over and here you are, my dear and loving child, you are here, so welcome. Welcome to your home. So I was feeling that those waves of welcome from Baba. And it, like, the story, my story started to repeat in my mind. It was really, you know, the last previous years before coming to Baba, I was really keenly interested in understanding the truth behind things. But that feeling of, it was just loving welcome. And you've arrived where you had to arrive. And the next day, Bap Dada was coming. So in those days, Bap would come every 2 or 3 days. And it was in the history hall, in the meditation hall. And So after, in the Mauli Baba himself is saying, you have arrived. You don't need to wander around anymore. This is it. So again, the confirmation of the conversation that I'd had the previous day, Baba saying the same thing. And of course, that feeling, and I have the fortune to have met Bab Dada like face to face countless times. I can't count how many times. Maybe 80, I don't know. But Baba would always meet the small group of foreigners every time, and he would. And just the feeling that, you know, it's Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba together, and you're really certain that Daddy Guzar is completely absent. Vibration is so powerful, and you can see it even in the transmissions that we still have. Baba's drishti. What is in Baba's drishti? And then you get an idea of, okay, what the nature of that love is. And first of all, his drishti is unlimited. So when he looks at us, he's not seeing the present state. He's not seeing the many mistakes that we've made over many lives. But his vision penetrates all of the rubbish. And he just sees the diamond. And he makes you feel like a diamond. He makes you feel, actually, his vision restores self-respect. Like, you know, and that drishti is saying, child, doesn't matter. You've tripped up many times, but I still love you. And you feel completely naked, right? Spiritually. That what he sees, the value that he sees in the soul, is the only thing that he sees and nothing else. So how do you think you would feel if you could get that sort of treatment? And in fact, we could get that sort of treatment every day if we wanted, because Baba is inviting us to the subtle regions to have that experience. And it's extremely, how to say, healing. And I've seen so many people meet Baba too, not just me, many. And Baba would always show that he knew something, that he was like concerned, personally concerned, actually. Once there was the first group that I took to Madhavan from Australia, was in 1976, the end of 76. I had a group of 16 from Australia. And there was one brother in those days. You see the nature of Baba's love. You know, taking away any sorrow, taking away anything that's irrelevant, removing to the side any rubbish, and that vision just penetrating all of that and bringing out the best in the soul just by a glance. But at the same time, his love very playful. So we were so surprised. You expect some sort of solemnity, you know, how in the path of devotion when they go about their prayers and they're so solemn, you know, so walking along. Or they're sometimes so uncontrollably ecstatic at the same time, but Baba, to our surprise, after one Muli, we'd never seen this before, and completely unexpected, you know, fantastic Muli, everyone's just flying, and then suddenly Baba starts to throw nuts. He could get a handful of almonds or walnuts and throw. And of course, everyone's scrambling around on the floor. This was in meditation hall. Everything's finishing up. In those days, Baba would meet Didi Manmohini as like the representative of everyone. Morley, and then Baba would talk to Didi, and through Didi he would be talking to all of us. Later on it was Didi and Daddy Prakashmani also, and then with time all of the daddies sort of to gather around. But there was a brother with me from Australia, and he said, "I didn't get my nut." And suddenly, through the air, comes whizzing and falls at his feet. And he said, "Oh, I've got my nut." And when Australia has very strict customs, you can't carry any sort of foodstuffs into Australia. They'll stop you. And so he was going to take that nut. I don't know what he was going to do with it. Maybe put it in some resin and sort of put it on the wall. This is the nut that God gave me. And they confiscated his nut. He was so upset. So you start to get glimpses. We get glimpses of the nature of Baba's love. Of course, in these personal meetings and our personal subtle meetings with Bap Dada, Amrit Velas, we get many, many glimpses of Baba's love. And of course, through the Muli, the way Baba speaks, the way that he takes up topics, the way that he shows his concern, the way that he is. And so, we've got a fairly good idea, actually, of how is it that Baba loves. And when you talk about the law of love, you're talking about the how. How, maybe why also. Why does Baba love us? What do you think? Pardon? Yeah, we are the ones that have to, do the work. We are the ones that have to recover our original qualities. And he knows that the way that that's going to happen is if we start to understand his love. And in fact, it's the power of his love which heals us, not anything else. I mean, you can understand the Gyan technically and intellectually. And of course, that gives you the sense of everything. It helps you understand the meaning of things. But it's actually his love which restores us to our original state, if we allow that to happen. And of course, Baba is like And it's not for, you know, it's not a coincidence that human beings have associated God with the sun. So that in many traditions you have God as a light or a sun, a source like a sun. Because the sun shines. And it shines without any, without any charge. Imagine if we had to pay the sun for its services. Can you imagine? Like, no sun, no life, right? It's the sun, in fact, that evaporates the water that rains on us. So rain is a sort of a consequence of the existence of the sun. And of course, any sort of electricity we have, it comes indirectly from the sun. So though we pay the electricity company for the services that it uses to organize all of that energy and get it to our houses, but the original source of it all doesn't charge. When you look at the different religions, Baba said in the past week how people need to develop their devotion in order to earn money, right? They earn my own, you said about charging for conferences. Actually, my background is in strategic planning and quality processes in companies. So if I ever charged for something, it was a technical conference rather than anything else. But Baba, just absolutely generous. And all of nature is like that too. The rivers, imagine if the rivers charge us or the dams charge us. Imagine if the atmosphere charged us to breathe. So if you look at nature, you get an idea of how it applies itself. It's absolutely generous, absolutely unconditional, absolutely beneficial. So Baba's like that too. And I don't know if in your language, but in English, the word nature is used for nature, the birds and the bees and the trees and the sky. But nature is also used for the inner state. So if my nature is like that nature, there's not a question about how to be. And you see, human beings, they're so insecure. And it's funny, isn't it? Because everyone wants to feel secure. Everyone wants to feel love. Everyone wants to feel safe. Everyone's searching for understanding. As if we're walking around with something on our chest saying, "Do you understand me? Help me to understand me. I don't understand me. Help me." So people are looking to be understood. People are looking to be loved. People are looking to feel secure. But at the same time, the way that they apply what they understand as love, which is normally just a mixture of attachment and ego, with a touch of lust, maybe. That's what they call love, but it's not love. It's a game. I love you if you love me. If you don't love me, watch out, you know. I will love you this much if you love me this much, right? And they keep accounts, right? I loved you 10 times last month. And this month you've only loved me 2x. It's not fair. I want a divorce. It's it defames love. It defames what love really is. You can't call it love if it lasts for 10 minutes. Imagine the sun. Look, you didn't like me yesterday, so I won't shine on you today. I'll shine on those people there because they showed some respect for me, but these people here, no, I'm going to... So they arrange with the clouds to come, you know. It's not like that at all. So the whole idea of the law of love is the why and the how of love, actually. I remember a meeting in London. It was after a few years in Australia, Daddy and Didi asked me to go to Brazil because there'd been an invitation. So I went there for 3 months and I'm still there. You know. Be careful of 3 month experience. We'll try you out for 3 months and then we'll see. Anyway, I used to go to Madhavan from there via London always. So I got to know the whole development of London. Even this time I came via England to get here. So otherwise it's a big trip, right? Just the distance from Sao Paulo to London is the same distance from London to Singapore. You know, to give you an idea how far it is. And then you've got London to here, which is another 9 hours. So I always used to break my journey in London. And once I was in a meeting, there was a brother's house there. Still there. Called Shanti Bhavan. Still there. It's a 3 or 4 story house. And a lot of brothers have passed by there, passed through there. And so the brothers coming through London will stay there until they built Diamond House and so on. But there was a meeting in the garage, and they'd organized the garage to be a sort of a meeting place. It was a big, big garage. And Daddy was meeting the brothers. And one of them said, Daddy, why don't you love us? And it was interesting, her answer. It was also to do with the how. Why is pretty obvious why Baba loves us and why we should love people who come to our centers and why we should make efforts to love ourselves. That's pretty clear. But the how is where we get it wrong. And so not only from our side, but also the expectations that we have of other people. How come you loving me like this? This is not what I expected, you know. Anyway, someone asked, Daddy, why don't you love us? And she said, if I loved you in the way that you want to be loved, none of you would be here. And how do we want to be loved, right? How would we like someone to, you know, the idea of family, what are our references? Probably dysfunctional. The majority have, you know, Baba says that each house is like a war zone. The sort of things that happen in our Lokic houses, you know, mother, father, children, in-laws, cousins, brothers, sisters, and that's why soap operas are so popular, because they're very close to the way people live. It's so complicated. Who has complications in their Lokic house here? Just one. Come on, be honest. Everything completely harmonious at home, is it? Everyone is saying yes to themselves, but they're shy to put their hand up. So our idea of how a family is and how the Brahmin family should be and how this and that is probably wrong, actually. Our reference should be Golden Age, not Iron Age. That sort of happiness. So, there has to be some sort of a balance in the way that we love. That's why Bob often says, have a balance between love and law. But he also says that the face of law should be love. So the way you apply any sort of spiritual law, underline that word spiritual, the way that we apply spiritual law should be with love. And I remember another conversation with Daddy G. You know, she could speak more English than she showed. A few of us were sitting with her on a plane coming from Chile to Argentina. And she was traveling at that time with little Mohini and someone else, I can't remember who. And it had been a very late night the night before, and, you know, there was a program, and so people got to bed late, and so it was the next day. We're traveling, and everyone was asleep from her side, from her party. And Daddy, the plane was sort of half empty. So she called me and Lucian and Angelica, who was in charge of Chile at the time, and Moira, who was on the plane too, who's in charge of Argentina, Luciana's Brazil. And so she called us and she said, I want to talk to you. Imagine Daddy. Broken English, but it was enough to understand. And she said, is there anything you'd like to ask me? I said, yeah. And everyone asked something, but I asked her, Daddy, how do you understand leadership? She said, it's just applying Baba's love. You know, in practice with people. And then she said, look, I'll give you an example. There are people who don't survive in Madhavan, she said. I'm paraphrasing her, it wasn't exactly these words. But from time to time, people don't stay in Madhavan for some reason. They can't stay, or they would something's happened, they've done something against Srimad, the attraction of their Laukik's been too strong, and so they leave. Even from the beginning, when they, after those, when they moved to India in 1950, they had difficulties to establish themselves here in Abu. They were in one place and then another place, and then they started to have this, I guess, between 52 and 58, they had a period where there wasn't much food or any sort of, and it was cold here in the winter, right? And people start to get sick, and the relatives are pressuring, look, don't stay there, you get sick. They don't have any food. Come, stay with us. Food and shelter, come. So the attractions were there. Anyway, that's been going on all the time. In any place, you'll find people that can't live in a center for any reason. And she said, when that happens, I feel responsible. I'm not responsible for the fact that they left, but I'm responsible because I didn't detect it soon enough. It was already too late when I acted. So her take on leadership is to be, you know, making sure that everyone has everything that they need, and even more than they need, so that they don't start to have useless thoughts. And if any of you remember Dadiji, in the first day that she sees a group of people, she'll ask, have everyone got everything you need? Is everything okay? Got enough blankets? You got enough, you know, everything? If you don't have, come to me. I'll make sure that you get them. That's definitely the generosity that she learned through Baba. Because Baba's the father. How else would he love? Baba's the father and the mother. So how else would he love except like that? So this whole idea of balancing love and law is pretty ridiculous, in effect. If you learn how to love the way Baba loves, you don't need to worry about the law side of it. It already is lawful. What is law? Law means dharma. It means within the code of conduct of Brahmins is to be loving. It is our code, so it's already written into the law. So we often come with our ideas and maybe we're keeping up, you know, with all of the Kali Yuga psychology and so on, the philosophy of this old world, whatever, we have certain standards. But the thing is that Baba has come to create standards for a new world and not simply, you know, revise the standards of the old world. He's come to create completely new standards. So the way that he does that, he exemplifies the sort of world that he wants to create. Yeah? No big secret in that. But this whole idea of you know, love. Can you imagine love at the same time as being karmatit? Love and no karmic connection. Then you get an idea of the sort of love that Baba wants us to have. Love that does not create dependence. Love that does not feed dependence. Love that does not create hurt, and that's the references that we have. People, you find people crying because I loved you so much and look what has happened. You know, they've hurt each other for love. No, it wasn't love, it was ego. Let's be honest. And so just think about it. Could you love without absolutely expecting any return? Could you love without wanting people to notice it? Look, I just made this fantastic cake. Does anyone recognize how great my cake is? You know? Make the cake. Don't think about who likes it or who doesn't like it. If you made it properly, everyone would like it anyway. So, I was just thinking that there's a lot of false beliefs that we have that we use to sustain ourselves, maybe. And I have to check all of the beliefs. Just let's take an example. Let's do some inner research. The last time you felt hurt by someone, or by something that happened. Maybe not hurt, but disappointed, upset. You know, you had more thoughts than you needed to have because someone did or said something. Can you think of a situation that was recent that sort of thing was there? Got one? Probably with another Brahmin. Not necessarily. We're much more forgiving of the Lokic world, right? Because, you know, they don't know. But these people that I live and work with and doing service with, they should know. How is it that they don't know how to treat me properly? Not possible. So think about what is the false belief that made you get upset? If it was true, you would never get upset. If your beliefs are true, they will never upset you. So it's only a false belief that makes you feel upset or hurt or dismayed or disappointed or, you know. It's not easy because Baba says this is a horse race and some of the horses are very close to each other, so they're... They're hitting each other as they move forward. That's why I guess horses have those things on, right? So they don't see the horses beside them. So we have to go ahead. Okay, wonderful that there are other horses in the race. Wonderful. But let me go ahead. I'll get there first. So just think about it. If there's any hurt for any reason, you'll find at the basis of it a false belief that someone or something should be something or something. What's the beneficial belief? What's the most beneficial belief? That everything is perfect. Everything is perfectly according to drama. When Baba says everything's perfect, it doesn't mean that everything is good. I mean, the war in Ukraine and the destruction of Gaza and all of the problems with Israel and anywhere in the world, you know, the attacks between one side and the other, you can't say that they're good, but they are perfect according to drama. Yeah? So in your own country, there's probably all sorts of difficulties, or climatic problems, nature's in confusion. I live in a part of the world where natural calamities are frequent. Earthquakes, volcanoes and floods mainly. Don't just think about it. So, everything is according to drama. It has to happen because there's some imbalance that's being rectified. That's what we call karma. Everything moves because of the need to balance. So if you see something out of balance, over time it will have to come back to where it was. So if someone's suffering, that's the payment for some other excess. Like Daddy Janky was perfectly stable according to drama. She could organize her thinking immediately. Sometimes we take time, right? Has anyone here ever been in an earthquake? Yeah? A few. Interesting, isn't it, the experience? Were you in Gyan? Twice, two times. Both before Gyan and during Gyan. And so what was the difference in your thinking? What happened? Before Gyan, how did you feel? Very afraid. After Gyan? Okay, yeah, sure. Earthquake happening. Oh, wonderful. I was giving a talk in Santiago, in Chile, and the name of the talk was Remaining Stable in the Chaos. In the middle of the talk, there was an earthquake. Not a tremor, no, 90 seconds almost of shaking. And I could notice my mental processes were exactly that. Oh, earthquake is happening. Interesting. Some people were in panic, other people were not. So I just organized my thinking. What can I do? If the roof falls down, what can I do? If it doesn't, it's better. Certainly, I mean, Gyan helps us to, in a moment, to adjust. If I've been close to Gyan in my thinking processes, if I've been close to Baba in my experiences, then anything that happens, anything, I can adjust. If I haven't been close, I will take longer to adjust. So, if I get to know Baba better, I will definitely be able to love better. So let's have a meditation now, and I would conduct some thoughts. Don't need music. No music. No, I don't need to change the lights even. When there's an earthquake happening, you can't say, can you put some music on, please, and let's put the red light on. So, just the whole thing is to make sure that love is balanced. So let's do the following. It's a love alignment exercise. Is that okay? So first of all, just to invoke Baba's presence, you don't need to see anything. Just dial up that address. So feel that you're in front of Baba. Actually, Bap Dada makes it easier. And you're feeling Baba's drishti. I am the long lost, now found child. Baba has been, just as I've been looking for Baba, Baba was looking for me, because I am that special child. So I'm in front of Baba. How much love do I feel from Baba to me? Just check. Unlimited love. Like coming in waves over me. Just in the glance. There's so much meaning. So much history. Like in today's Morley, the soul and the supreme soul were separated for a long period of time. It's true. But now that Baba's here, why would I remain separate? So I'm just feeling so much love from Baba. And at the same time, all of the different sort of threads of my love in this world, many of which have not been very successful, I'm just getting it all together into one love from my side. So just feel how much love Baba has for me and how much love I have for Baba. He's just in front of me. And there's this loving exchange. Nothing else, really, just me and Baba. Just feel that love. From your side to Baba and from his side to you. Nothing like it, actually. Just feel it. Okay, with this in mind, bring onto the screen of your mind someone that you get along with, someone that you find easy company, somehow their nature is friendly to you. Now just check. Is the love that I have for Baba and the love that he has for me, is it the same as the love that I have for this other person? Should be the same. The love that Baba gives me and the love that I give to this person who is close to me is the same. Same quality. It's not based on attraction or trying to impress or dependency. It's just love, spiritual love that God has taught me. Okay, now bring onto the screen of your mind someone that you don't get along with for any reason. Someone that you've crossed paths with and has been a disappointment maybe. Someone that you don't exactly feel harmony towards. Okay, ask yourself, how come it's different? Isn't that soul the same as the first one? Isn't that another child of Baba? Baba loves that one, how come I don't? So try to bring your feeling towards that individual into the same sort of love that you have for Baba and Baba has for you. Should be the same. There should be no difference. If there's a difference, it's something I have to learn. The world that we divide into friends and enemies, actually, they are neither friends nor enemies. Unless everyone is a friend. Because Baba's love is the same for all. My love should be the same for all. That's the law. Now, bring onto the screen of your mind yourself. See yourself in a typical scene of your day. And check. If the love that I have for Baba and the love that he has for me is exactly the same as the love that I have for myself. Should be the same. So let's just spend some, let's say, 10 minutes in silence. Aligning love. Me for Baba, Baba for me, me for anyone else, and me for myself. Shanti. Would anyone like to say something or ask something? Are you sitting near someone who understands your language? Are you? So, can you share with that person a little bit what just happened for you? They're sharing amongst themselves, first of all, brother. Then when you went to get the microphone, I gave a new instruction because they were not responding well. So give them a couple of minutes and then we'll see. Yeah, this brother's looking for someone to talk to. Not to say something, to share with him. He wants to share with you first, I think.
No.
No?
I want to share something.
Okay, then we'll have to wait for a minute or so. Give one more minute and then we can listen to. Okay. Feeling good? Yeah. Okay. Can we listen to this, your comments now?
I found it, the mirror to myself was most difficult.
The what?
The mirror for myself. The love for myself. The love for I have for God, and that. To, I said it reflected to myself. That's where it gets. Then it got dark in myself.
Yeah, we don't love ourselves as much as Baba loves us. Generally, is that right? Why? Am I not lovable? Yeah, got something to say. Wait, get the mic. It's being recorded apparently, so.
Because it's always that belief that if we love ourselves, it is being body conscious or ego. So it's very difficult to even apply that love. But for others, like how Baba loves us, or that we love others, strangers is easier than anybody close to us. And for yourself, even harder.
Now you understand, huh? If we don't love ourselves as Baba loves us, it's not lawful. It's awful. Anyone else? It looks like here's one.
So, Brother Ken, a question is I have, you know, we feel cut or dry. You know, we feel very dry when we are trying to do yoga or we want to have communication with Baba. It's easy to communicate right now when I'm doing with you because you're listening to me. So I experience some exchange. But as far as Baba is concerned, when I do that, it's a bit difficult. And in the bargain, what happens is then I kind of horizontally exchange emotions. Otherwise, you know, I don't get that feeling of belonging or loved, quote unquote. So how do I reconcile this vertical love as versus this horizontal love? I'm sure you're very, very experienced and you can do justice to this particular question in a very authentic and a sincere way.
This is another class. Very quickly, you know, the secret is in being the instrument of Baba's love. Then you get to understand what it is and how it works, and then you've got something to talk about. Instead of, it's very, very important to not skip the heart-to-heart conversation with Baba. You just try to connect with a point of light. It doesn't work. You've got to have a heart-to-heart conversation. And that's actually with Bab Dada. Because there's no such a thing in the soul world. Heart-to-heart conversation. It's not an incorporeal experience. It's a subtle experience. So, just try, when you're interacting with others, try to remember that you are also an instrument of Baba's love and not of your own ego. Then it becomes easier to understand what it's all about. Because actually, it's no secret. It's dead simple. You know, real simple. But just as Baba's so simple, why would it be difficult to come closer to him? It's not, the difficulty is not on his side, it's on my side. So try to pick up his attributes. Try to put those attributes into practice in your interaction with others. You know, if you're a father, let's say, then try to remember how Baba is the father of you and be that sort of father. If you're a friend, try to remember how Baba is your friend and be that sort of friend. So you're putting the relationship into practice at a horizontal level. And then you're actually bringing Baba down to the horizontal level. Otherwise, it's, you know, the devotee in God, you've got to get away from that. It's just the child and the father. Hi, Dad. How are you? Everything going well? Yeah. You know, that sort of familiarity. Okay, so enjoy. I don't know how many more days you have in Madhuban, but enjoy. Okay? Om Shanti.